Okay, we are Bava Kamma Lamed Chet. We're going to start at the Mishnah Lamed Zayin. Okay, much easier material than the last few days. Shor shel Yisrael shenagach shor shel hekdesh, v'shel hekdesh shenagach l'shor shel hedyon. Okay, we've actually seen this before. If a shor that belongs to a Jew attacks a shor that was belonging to the Beit HaMikdash, it was some animal that was already designated for a korban or for some use in the Beit HaMikdash, or shel hekdesh shenagach l'shor shel hedyot, either which way, if the shor that attacked was a hedyot, patur. Why is this? Very simply, shenemar shor re'ehu, right? The pasuk had said, when the shor attacks a shor of his friend, and hekdesh is obviously not your friend, that belongs to God. Below shor shel hekdesh. Shor shel Yisrael, now we have another one, and this is going to be one of those difficult halachot, which you're even going to see that the Gemara grapples with, and they bring up how difficult this is. Shor shel Yisrael shenagach l'shor shel Kna'ani. Okay, a Jewish shor attacks a non-Jewish shor. Basically, not the shor is non-Jewish. The owner is non-Jewish. That's not obvious. Now, here it says Kna'ani, by the way. It doesn't say non-Jewish. It doesn't say Nochri. It says Kna'ani. He's patur. So the owner of the Jewish owner doesn't have to pay the non-Jewish owner damages. Maybe we could tolerate that if we didn't have this next line, which is v'shal Kna'ani shenagach l'shor shel Yisrael. Bein tam bein mu'a mishalem nezek shalem. Okay. Now, first of all, how do you enforce that? Number one, what are we talking about? How can we make a non-Jew pay in our courts? You know, that's one question. Number two, why is it so severe, first of all? In other words, he's got to pay not only what a regular Jew pays for a regular Jew, but he's got to pay more because there's no short tam issue, but he always pays nezek shalem.
Do they assume there's something worse about the ox, or it's just a knas for not being Jewish?
Right, so it's a good question. It seems like not that the ox is any worse. The Me'iri points out here, okay, maybe from here we can learn a little bit more about it. It's a very interesting Me'iri. He says, in general, the Me'iri tried to neutralize. The Me'iri is living in Provence in, I think, 13th century, 1300s maybe. I don't remember exactly around that time. But he had a whole approach to non-Jews in general. And he claims that when it talks about Aklum, it's not relating to non-Jews of our day, he says. It doesn't relate to Christians. It's talking about pagans. That was his whole approach when it comes to, let's say, Bishul Aklum, even I think he discusses it, and other things. He basically puts aside a lot of these halachot. And here he says, ulefi ma she'ne'amar b'gemara, dafka ba'amimim she'enam gidurim b'darchei datot b'nimusim. We're talking about, and you have to remember also in the Torah, the Kna'ani was the evil, right? They were the ones, the Sheva Amim and the Kna'ani, the major one, because we're attacking Eretz Kanaan, and we have to get rid of all the Toavot that exist in their culture. And he's basically saying they're not gidurim, they're not bound, like fenced in. And in religion, and in nimusim, in behavior, kamo shamar alehem b'gmara, ra'a sheva mitzvot shekiblu alehem b'nei noach, shelo kimum, we're going to see this in today's Gemara, okay, that God saw that there were these seven mitzvot that they didn't, you know, they didn't do the sheva mitzvot b'nei noach, the noach had laws, ama v'hitir mamonam. So God came in, we're going to see this in the Gemara, and was matir their money, basically said their money is free for all. And their money doesn't really belong to them because they're not abiding by laws of society. Right? The seven mitzvot b'nei noach are mostly to keep people behaving appropriately. So kol sha'a sha'adin mechayvam b'kach ha'kol sha'adin mechayvam k'dineinu etzlam b'enosim u'me'ata ein tzarich lomar she'kem ba'amot ha'gdurot b'darkei datot b'nimusim. And therefore, this doesn't apply at all when we're talking about nations that keep laws within religion, which basically, what's he talking about? Christianity, right? Okay, and obviously other cultures also, but, you know, he's basically saying he neutralizes this mission almost entirely, okay? And he says what this mission is talking about is people who have no bounds in society, no societal structure. We, our job is to give them structure, and therefore we're going to be mechayev them more than us because they're obviously not keeping to any sort of system of law.
Does that go across the, does he hold that across the board?
So that's what I'm saying. He, in general, so it's a good, I don't remember how far he goes with all these issues, but he definitely holds this in other places where he neutralizes it, says akum, and it doesn't mean Christians or right, exactly. Right. Now the question, what motivated him to do this, was it really be, you know, was it that was what he believed, and that was, or maybe he was also trying to relate to the fact that we're going to even see in the Gemara that they struggled with this in terms of the other nations, and it could potentially lead to bad relationships and killings, and, you know, like we know, blood libels and all sorts of things because of the attitude that, oh yeah, well, we don't care about you, so, you know, maybe it was a little, he was trying to be PC about it. I don't know the answer to that question. I'm sure there's stuff written about it, but the Meiri definitely has a unique shita here and worth bringing in. Okay, first thing the Gemara is going to say is, Matznitin deloka Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh. Okay, first we're going to talk about the Hekdesh issue, then we'll get to the non-Jewish issue. Titania. Okay, Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh clearly is going to have a different approach here. It says in a Braita, Shur shel hedyot shenagach shur shel hekdesh, v'shel hekdesh shenagach shur shel hedyot patur, shenemar shur re'eo v'lo shur shel hekdesh. That matches our mission exactly. Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh Omer, here's the continuation of that Braita, Shur shel hekdesh shenagach shur shel hedyot patur, if the animal who attacked belonged to the Beit HaMikdash, well then he's patur, but shel hedyot shenagach shur shel hekdesh, bein tam bein muad, mishalem nezek shalem. Here, this is going to end the same way the Mishnah ended with the non-Jew, which is that if you have a regular shor owned by a Jew and he attacks a hekdesh shor, well, we're going to treat him more severely because he attacked a hekdesh shor. And he's going to even have to pay nezek shalem if it was a shor tam. Amre, my kasavar Rabbi Shimon. So then they said, well, what is Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh holding here? I re'ehu dafka, if we're going to say re'ehu specifically means your friend and not God, something belonging to the Beit HaMikdash, well then afilu shel hedyot shenagach shel hekdesh should be lipatir, should be patur. And I re'ehu lav dafka, and if you're going to say the re'ehu doesn't necessarily mean to exclude the shore of God or of the Beit HaMikdash, then afilu de hekdesh, nami ki nagach de hedyot lichayev, then also the shore of hekdesh, the attacks of regular shore should be mechayev. So what could he say? What's he basing his logic on? The chitema, and if you want to say, this always gets rejected, remember the chitema, la'olam kasava re'eu dafka, really re'eu is just re'eu, just Jew to Jew and not Jew to someone who belongs to God. Umiu dehedyo kinagach dehekdesh, hainu tamad mechayev, mishum dekamaitela mekavachomer dehedyot. And if you want to say, well, maybe the basic halacha is regular Jew to regular Jew, but, right, only re'ehu and not God, and right, then you might say we can learn from a kal vachomer though from hedyot. In other words, the pasuk means just hedyot to hedyot, okay, regular to regular. But from hedyot, who's the attacker, right, we're going to learn, from hedyot who's being attacked, okay, if the nizak is the hedyot, then we can learn from here a kal vachomer if the nizak is hekdesh, because we can say like this, right? Right? So maybe that's the best way to say it. Really, the pasuk means hedyot to hedyot only. But from a kavachomer, we're going to learn that if you attack a shor shel hedyot, then obviously if you attack a shor shel hekdesh, you're going to have to pay. But what's the problem? What did we learn about a kavachomer? We have this concept, dayola bomena din liot kanidon. When you learn something from a kavachomer, you can only learn the details as they are in the original. And what are the details for a hedyot who attacks a hedyot? Muad nezek shalem. And tam chatzi nezek. And what did we say here by the hedyot? If you attack a hedyot, what's going to be the halacha? No matter what, you're mishalem shalem. You have to pay full damages. So therefore, we can't say that we learned it out of a kavachomer, because if we learned it from a kavachomer, we would have to learn it exactly as the original halacha is, which is muad nezek shalem, tam chatzi nezek. So therefore, you can't bring that argument. So we're going to read that inside now. If you're going to learn something from a kavachomer, you can only learn exactly what the original halacha is. So mala halan tam chatzi nezek, hachanami, the tam should be chatzi nezek also here. So therefore, we're still looking for a reason. Ela amarish lakish, hakol hayu bichlal nezek shalem. Really, in theory, even a tam is supposed to pay nezek shalem. Kishe peret lacha katuv re'ehu, gabe tam re'ehu, de tam shalem chatzi nezek, michlal de hechdesh, bein tam bein mu'ah, mishalem nezek shalem. Now we're going to say that the word re'ehu comes to teach you, the word re'ehu, by the way, appears only in the psukim by a shor tam and not in the psukim by a shor mu'ad. So what's it telling you? It's telling you that really, The Shur Shel Hekdesh is also part of this whole, you know, if you attack a Shur Shel Hekdesh, you have to pay damages, and you have to pay regular damages. But what are regular damages? Now we're going to learn. Regular damages is Nezek Shalin. There's a unique halacha that comes up only by Re'ehu, that if a Hedyot attacks a Hedyot and it's Tam, it only has to pay Chatzi Nezek. But that unique, you know, issue only relates to Re'ehu and not to the Hekdesh. So therefore, it's almost, this is again perspective on how we view this Chatzin Nezek of Tam. Do we view it as there's a law of Chatzin Nezek by Tam and there's a law of Muad? Or do we view it as really everyone's supposed to pay Nezek Shalem, but there, we make an exception and we only make you pay half damages. But that's only going to be if you attack a Shor Shel Re'ehu and not if you attack a Shor Shel Hekdesh. Then we're going to keep you with the basic halacha. Tomorrow also we're going to get into the issue, we won't be learning together here, but I'm teaching on Shabbat for those in town. We're going to talk about the whole issue of how we view the payment. We actually made reference to this one other time of Shor Mu'ad. When you pay full damages, are you paying Tam plus Mu'ad? In other words, half of the payment is your payment for that Shor Tam, and half your payment is for the additional for the Shor Mu'ad, which, by the way, would be a very different perspective than this, because this is saying that really the whole thing is Mu'ad, and we're going to just reduce it by half. The other approach is to say, no, we're going to make you pay half for the Tam, and then once it's already done three times, well, then we're going to make you add an additional half. Okay, and then there's going to be nafkaminas between how you view that. Okay, that's insight into tomorrow's stuff. Okay. So now, and then what's their proof that this is really the case? De'im kein nichtav kra lahai re'ehu gabe mu'ad. It should have written re'ehu also in the mu'ad pasuk, and since re'ehu only appears in the tam pasuk, that's going to be his proof. Okay, now we're going to get to the Shor Shel Yisrael Shenagach Shor Shel Kna'ani. Shor Shel Yisrael Shenagach Shor Shel Kna'ani patur. Amre mima nafshach. So again, we're going to have a question here, either which way you look at it. I re'ehu dafka Diknani ki nagafti Yisrael nami li pater. If we're going to say exactly as we said before, Re'ehu means just Re'ehu, well then, right, you're going to say the Knani should also be patur. Vi'i Re'ehu lavdafka. And if Re'ehu doesn't mean only non-Jew, but, I'm sorry, only Jew, but maybe also would include non-Jew, well then afilu di Yisrael ki nagafti Knani nichayev. Right, again, the question is, why are we making distinctions in one direction? If the pasuk either includes everything or excludes everything. Amarabia, because right, both in this case and the Shor of Hekdesh, there was a difference, you know, at least according to Rav Shimon ben Manasseh in the second part and in the Rav Shimon ben Manasseh in the Hekdesh case and in the Kna'ani in the Mishnah itself, that it's like a double standard. So why is that? Amarabia, Amar Kra, Amod v'yimoded aretz ra'a v'yater goyim. Okay, what is this? This is a pasuk from Habakkuk. Okay, it's an unclear pasuk what this means. Okay, so now we're going to say God stood when he was measuring the earth. He saw, okay, so he's going to see something. And as a result, vayater goyim. He's going to, okay, we don't know yet what vayater is. Okay, it could be l'shem matir. Okay, we'll see other options of it also. Ra'ah, what did God see? Sheva mitzvot, and this is what the Meiri based himself on. Sheva mitzvot shekiblu alehem b'nei Noach. Okay, and that he saw. Sheva mitzvot shekiblu alehem b'nei Noach. Kevan shelo kimu. He saw that they weren't being mekayim the sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach. Amad v'hitir mamonam liYisrael. Okay, so again, this is cleansed what we saw already in the Meiri. God said, okay, that's what this pasuk, Ra'ah v'yater goyim. He was matir their money. And therefore, he said, their money is up for grabs, so if their property ruins something of yours, you can make them pay. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Mehacha, he learned it from a different pasuk. Hofia mehar paran. Okay, this is a pasuk in Dvarim. It says, Vayomer Hashem Yisinai Bava Zerach Misir Lamo. This is from Hazinu. Hofia mehar paran va'ata mirvot kodesh mimino esh tat lamo. Okay, a famous pasuk. So what's this hofia mehar paran? Mi paran hofia mamonan li Yisrael. From Paran, which is a non-Jewish area, the money came, hofia is talking about their mamon. And where is it mofia? It's mofia, right? This is clearly taking the pasuk out of the pshat. It's mofia to be there for the Jews. In other words, their money is at your disposal. Obviously, you can take this way too far, But what they're saying here is this is teaching us this halacha. Okay, so right now we have two different psukim. Rabbi Abau brings one, Rabbi Yochanan brings another. Now the Gemara is going to tell us that, by the way, there's a braita, and the braita brings exactly these two psukim. Okay? And then we're going to say, well, why does the braita need to bring two different psukim? Why couldn't they have just brought one? Tanya Nami Hachi. Here's a braita that supports this. Shor shel Yisrael shenagach shor shel Kenani patur. Shor shel Kenani shenagach shor shel Yisrael bein tam bein muam shalem nezek shalem. Exactly the halach in our Mishnah. But here it adds, shene'emar, because it says in the Pasuk, amav yimodeid eretz ra'av yater goyim. Ve'omer, and additionally it says, hofia mehar paran. So very many times we have this where a braita says, and it says, and then the Gemara is going to say, my ve'omer, which basically means, why does it say the word ve'omer, which means, why did it need to bring both psukim? V'chi tema hai amavi modeid aretz mibayle l'chidurav matnav chidurav Yosef. Tashma hofia mehar paran. Miparan hofia mamonan l'Yisrael. So now they say, if you want to say that the first pasuk, v'yimodeid eretz, we need for a different drasha, which Rav Matna says, or Rav Yosef says, in other words, this pasuk is used to teach us different halachot. Rav Matna thinks it teaches us something else. He understood the pasuk differently. And Rav Yosef thinks it teaches it's understood differently. So therefore, if you want to start to argue and say, well, I understand the pasuk like Rav Matna, so I can't learn this halacha from here, well, then we have the second pasuk, V'ofia mehar paran, so that we can prove, no matter what, we can say that their mamon is for the Jews for the taking. So now, obviously, what are we left with? Well, what does Rav Matna say? What does Rav Yosef say with this pasuk? How did they each darshan this pasuk? Because they kind of make this reference to something as if we all know what it's talking about, but the Gemara thankfully realizes we don't know everything, and they're going to tell us, well, my de Rav Matna, what did he say? Da'am Rav Matna, ma v'imodeid eretz ra'a v'yatar goyim, ma ra'a, ra'ah sheva mitzvot shenitzdivu aleihem b'nei noach v'lo kimum. Okay, again, the beginning is the same. He saw that they weren't mekayim the sheva mitzvot b'nei noach. Amad v'higla otam me'al admatam. Vayatar doesn't mean he let their mamon be hefker. It meant that he was gola otam. He threw them out of their lands. Umay mashma dahai vayatar lashon di'igluye. How do you know that vayatar means galut? K'tiv hacha vayatar goyim uk'tiv hatam linater bahen ala aretz. Okay, what's this pasuk linater bahen ala aretz? It's from Vayikra, and it's talking about the sheretz. Achetzet tochlu, it's talking about which things you can eat. Mikol sheretz ha'of ha'olech al-arba, sherlo lo kra'ayim, mimal ra'glav, linnater ba'mal ha'aretz. He has these wings to jump upon the land. Now, what does it mean to jump, right? U'mitargim lekafze bahon al-ara. So if you're jumping, right, you're getting removed from where you were from and you're going somewhere else. So therefore they say if linnater there means to jump and to be removed from where you are, then vayater here can be lashon of galut. Okay, it's not exactly the same meaning, but you can extend it. My dear Rav Yosef, what did Rav Yosef say about this pasuk? Again, what each one is doing, they all start with the same premise, that what did God see? They weren't in time to shem mitzvah opening off. The question is, what was their punishment? So for our purposes, it was easy to say our punishment was to be matir than Ramon, but if you don't say that, then you can't say it from here. So, my dear Rav Yosef, Dam Rav Yosef, Amav Yimodeid Eretz Ra'a V'yatar Goyim, Ma Ra'a, Ra'a Sheva Mitzvot Shekiblu Alehem B'nei Noach V'lo Kimum, Amad V'hitiran Lehem. He was matir the mitzvot. Whoa, that's big, right? In other words, he saw they weren't Mekayim Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. So he said, fine, you don't want to do them? Don't do them. They'll be mutar to you. L'shon mutar. So now they say, itgure etgar, what they get rewarded, because they weren't keeping Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, now they're not commanded to keep them? Imke matzinu chote niskar. Then we see that someone who does something bad is going to be rewarded. Remember this phrase, because it's going to come up at the end of the daf also. Amar mar b'rei d'ravna, lomar sha'afilu mekaymin otan, ein mekablim alehen sachar. What does it mean? It doesn't mean that they don't have to keep the mitzvot. It means that if you're not commanded to do something, well, then you don't get rewarded for them. So basically it means, well, they're supposed to keep them, but now, because originally they were supposed to keep them and get sechar for them. Now if they keep them, they won't even get rewarded for them. Okay? So now we're going to have a question with this too. V'hatanya, Rabbi Meir Omer, minayin shafilu nochriva osek b'torah shehu kekohen gadol. Interestingly enough, they bring an example of learning Torah. They don't even bring an example of Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, right? It's not like the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach to learn Torah. Some of them, Apreshim, say it means the Nochrimat can't actually learn Torah, but they can learn mitzvot that relate to them. So like if they're learning the Sheva mitzvot B'nei Noach, that's what we're talking about. Because they think that, oh, maybe Nochrim aren't allowed to learn Torah. So there's a whole debate about that also. But Rabbi Meir says, how do you know if a Nochri is Osek B'Torah, that he's like a Kohen Gadol? What they really mean here is he's, you know, he can make it to the highest level of Sachar, basically get the most Sachar. Talmud Lamar, that he's considered a great person, you know, which obviously means he gets rewarded. Talmud Lamar, Asher Yaseh Otam Ha'adam V'Chai Bahem. What do you notice in this Pasuk? The mitzvot are v'chai b'hem, right? This is talking about the mitzvot. A man will do the mitzvot, a person will do the mitzvot, v'chai b'hem. Kohanim, Levi'im, v'Yisraelim, lo ne'emar. It doesn't say, if Asher Yaseh Otam, Kohanim, Levi'im, v'Yisraelim, or in other words, it doesn't say Jew, right? Ela Adam. Adam is a universal word. Halamadita shafilu nochriva osek b'tarah ha'reu k'kohen gadol. Okay? He can get sachar like a kohen gadol. Amre, so now what are you going to say? So we just said that they won't get sachar for doing the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. But wait a minute. But we see they do get sachar for doing mitzvot. So Amre, Ein mekablim alehem schar ke mitzuveh ve'ose, ela ke mi she'eno mitzuveh ve'ose. Da'amar Rabbi Chanina gadol mitzuveh ve'ose, yoter mi she'eno mitzuveh ve'ose. Okay, so therefore he answers that it must be, he does get a reward for doing the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, because we prove that they get rewarded, but they won't get as much reward because they were no longer commanded. In other words, when they were commanded originally, before God got upset with them, so they were commanded and they would have gotten the same sachar that we got, again, the sachar for the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, not for all the mitzvot. But once they ruined their status because they weren't keeping them, God got angry at them and he said, you know what, you're no longer commanded, which means, doesn't mean you don't have to do them, you still have to do them. It doesn't mean you won't get rewarded for them, you'll still get rewarded, but you won't get the reward of one who is commanded. Okay.
Which is grist for a whole other argument.
What do you mean?
The whole discussion about doing things without being commanded. And
right, that's a whole other question about why you're, right, yeah, we had this discussion already, right. Exactly. Right, we'll go back to, right, that was for Kiddushin, right, we're not going to get into that now. We have a lot of other interesting things here that we haven't yet learned. Tana Rabbanan, Ukra Shacha Machut Romi, Shnei Sardiotot Etzel Chachmei Yisrael. Okay, the Romans sent two, how do they translate it? Officers, yeah. What was the other word? Officers? Okay. Two officers to the Chachmei Yisrael, and they said, Limduni Toretchem. Please teach us your Torah. So by the way, there was a note in the Koran that says that there's two ways to understand the story as far as I can tell. One is the way the Koran kind of takes it, which is that in the Roman time period, in the beginning, when the Romans took over, they weren't very interested in Jewish culture or anything like that. As time went on, they started to appreciate and see, and they wanted to learn more about it. So this is relating to a bit of a later period, right, in the time of the Tanaim already, where the Romans are starting to get interested in Jewish culture, and it's like a positive thing. Another way of looking at this, I think, is that the story never actually happened. It's the rabbis showing their own grappling with the text and the problematic, the nature of this halacha, okay? And that it never really happened that these two Roman officers came and this whole story actually came about, but it's showing how they are internally struggling with this issue of the double standard for non-Jews. So they come to Chachmei Yisrael and they say, Limdunu Toratchem. Kiru ushnu v'shileshu. Sorry, karu v'shanu v'shileshu. They learned it. They did it a second time. They learned it a third time. Okay, meaning they got very into learning Torah. B'shat p'tiratan amru lahen dikdakuni b'chol toratchem ve'emet. Who's going to die here?
We've gone over it very carefully.
No. Not p'tiratan when they were dying. When they were leaving. Sorry. After they went over this, the next story is about death, so I had death in my mind. When, as they were parting from him, they said, by the way, p'tiratan and parting, it's similar letters, right? They said, diktakuni, right, we've learned all of your Torah, and we believe that it's true, okay? We really buy into your whole Torah. Chutz mi davar zesha atem omrim, except for one halacha. I've got one problem. Yeah. Sure, right? We'd be lucky if that was our one issue, right? Shur shel Yisrael shenagach shur shel Knani patur v'shel Knani shenagach shur shel Yisrael bein tam bein muam shalem nezek shalem. Right? I have a problem. We take issue with this halacha. Mimanashach. I re'ehu dafka, right? It doesn't make sense. Either re'ehu means re'ehu, Jewish, not non-Jewish. And then, afilu d'knani ki nagaf t'Israel lipater, then the knani should be totally removed from the salacha. He shouldn't have to pay. V'i re'ehu lav dafka, and if re'ehu doesn't mean re'ehu, but it includes non-Jews, then afilu t'Israel ki nagaf t'knani l'chayev. Now, what do they say, though? Because they appreciated the rest of the Torah, they say, v'davar zeh ein anu modi'im oto l'machud. But we're going to keep our mouths shut about this, and we're not going to tell the authorities, because we know that if we tell the Roman authorities, they'll kill you, you know, or there'll be bad ramifications. So again, either this is a real story, or the rabbis are trying to say that there's a problematic halacha, and not only that, but if the Romans get gist of it, we're going to be in big trouble, and therefore, you know, we got to figure out what to do about it. Okay, they don't really do anything about it, but they're basically saying, I think it's their way of struggling with the issue. Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda shchiva lebarta. Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, his daughter died. Amro le Rabbanan le'ula, kum nezal ninchame. The rabbis, okay, this is happening in Bavel. Ula was one of the nechute. Remember what the nechute are? Nachat is to go down, like the airplane, you know, nechitot. They would go down from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel and bring the Torah of Eretz Yisrael. So he was an Israeli. And he has issue with the Bavlim in general. We've seen sugyot like this, and Ula himself was a player in those sugyot, where there's these anti-Bavli sugyot. So the Bavli rabbis say, come with us to be Menachem Ava. Amar lehu, my itli gabei nechem to de Bavlai. Digidu fahu. What do I want to be going visiting him with you Bavlim? You guys, when you go, you do giduf. What is giduf? When you disgrace the name of God, when you go b'menachem avelim. Okay, here we're going to get tips on what to and not to say when you go to Beit Ava. Okay, you might be surprised by these tips, but anyway, here we have. So, da'amre, what do they say? My efshar l'me'abed. The Bavlim say, what can we do? Okay, now, what's the assumption of that phrase? What can we do? Meaning, there's nothing we can do. Okay, that's their way of being Menachem. He says the implication of that is ha'efsha l'me'abad avde. In other words, what does it mean? What can we do? What can we do? God did this. What is there for us to do? The implication, he says, of that statement is if we could do something though against God, we would. Okay, and therefore he thinks it's like giduf against Hashem. Okay, because it's saying we're there. Right? It's like saying the king made me do this, you know, and I have no choice because the king did it. But if I could go against the king, I would. But I can't, so I won't. But it means you basically want to go against the king. So if you say that kind of line, it's giduf against Hashem. So azalhu lechude. Wait till you hear what he says. Okay, azalhu lechude gabe. He went by himself. He didn't want to go with the other rabbis. He went to be Menachem Ava. What did he say? Amarle vayomer Hashem. Okay, to Moshe. Al tatzeret Moav va'al tidgar ba milchama. Okay, here we're going to see why this comes up here, because it's about non-Jews. Don't attack Moav and don't make a milchama against them. B'chima la'al da'ato shel Moshe la'asot melacha shelo b'reshut. What, you think Moshe thought he would do a milchama without questioning God? Should we go and attack Moav? Ela nasa Moshe kavachomer ba'atzmo, amar. Uman midyanim shelo ba'u ela la'azoret Moav, amra Torah tzoret ha-midyanim v'ikitem otam. Moavim atzman lo kol shekein. What happened? The Moavim wanted to attack, and what did they do? They wanted to destroy us, so with Bil'am and that, so they brought in the Midyanim to help them. So the Midyanim, right, what happened? They brought the Midyanim women, and then the whole thing with Zimri and Cosby happened. So what is he saying? Maybe he would have thought I can make a kavachomer, that if the Midyanim, who only were accessories to the fact, they didn't initiate, then God told me, go out and fight. So Moab, who initiated the whole thing, lo kol shekein, I should go out and fight them. So therefore, God had to tell him, don't go fight. Amar lo kadosh baruch hu. Now, so the question is, why didn't God want him to fight against the Moabim? If they were worse, right, shouldn't we fight against them? So why did Hashem say, lo titgar b'melchama? The way you think about it is not the way I think about it. First of all, there's a reference here maybe to also that we don't always understand the way of God in terms of maybe this halacha, you could say.
Or in terms of somebody dying.
Right, or for sure in terms of someone dying. But that's not really where he's going with it. Well, sort of he's going with it. He's saying you don't see the full picture. Shtei predot tovot yeshli. Lehotzi mehen. Ruta moaviyah v'nama amonit. I don't want you to destroy the Moavim because there's two women that are going to come after them. There's obviously a problem here, which is one is from Ammon, and could be just, they're saying there's two, in the future there's going to be two great women that are going to come from foreign nations, and one of them happens to be from Moab. That's how you have to read this, because the Ammon one is not relevant to this. Okay, and therefore, I don't want you to attack them because I see the future that they have. There's some reason, right? They have reason to live still because I need them for some part of my, you know, my plan. V'halo dvarim kavachomer. Uma b'shvil shtei predot tovot chas HaKadosh Baruch Hu al shtei umot gedolo v'lo hechrivan. Right? So now he's going to say there's a kavachomer here. If because of these two great women, God didn't want to kill, here comes the real crazy punchline, God didn't want to kill these two great nations, b'tosha Rebbe, your daughter, im ksherahi ruyai letzed mimena davar tov, al acha kama v'kama dehava chaya. If God had some plan in mind for her in the future that someone great was going to come out of her, then God would have spared her. In other words, what he's basically saying, which sounds terrible, is your daughter had nothing good for her in the future, because if she did, God would clearly have let her live to fill out her plan in life. Now, this sounds like a horrible way to be achay of somebody. Okay, so obviously, you have to try to figure out, the Mefarshim try to grapple with what was he saying. So, what he was basically trying to console him, the way they understand it is, that he was trying to console him by saying that she fulfilled her purpose in life. In other words, don't feel like she had an unfulfilled life. God had a purpose in mind for her, that purpose was fulfilled, and if there was more for her to do, God would have let her live longer. So, in a sense, you should understand that there's some sort of closure because she fulfilled her purpose in life. Looking at it, instead of the glass is half empty, the glass is half full, I guess. That she did what she did and did what God wanted her to do. Still quite difficult to swallow. What's really interesting about this is actually brought l'halacha. Okay, this issue. The Yamshel Shlomo says, we don't paskin like Ula. Okay, and it might actually cause the person more pain if you say something like this. So you shouldn't say like Ula, he's too direct. But the Rama, okay, this is, right, the Ashkenazi posek who writes his comments in the Shulchan Aruch, he paskins like Ula. And he says you shouldn't say, I'm sorry, what can we do? Okay, by the way, how do you explain this, against Ula, right? How do you explain what the Bavlim were saying? They were saying, it's out of our control, right? This is out of our control. And the way the Mefreshim understand him is, and move on, because you can't wallow in your misery, you got to just move on. So the Rama actually quotes the halacha that you're not allowed to say that, and that you can only say what Ula said, that that's the way you should be menachem and ava, which is really interesting. He quotes this halacha. Like I said, the Yamshel Shlomo does impact Paskin that way, and again, whether you have to view these things as, they're halach or not, what you aren't allowed to say in a Beit Avel. I mean, obviously there are halachot that guide what you should say, but I thought it was very interesting that this story is brought up lahalacha, and there's a machloket about it, how we paskin. Okay. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekapeach Schar Kobriya, Vafilu Schar Sicha Na'a. Okay, God doesn't ignore rewarding people. And even the reward he gives to people for speaking appropriately, like using nice language. De'ilu b'chira, again, we're going to learn this from Ammon and Moav. B'chira de ka'amra Moav, amar lo kadosh baruch hu l'moshe, right, what did the b'chira, the b'chor, what happened? The b'not lot, right, Ammon and Moav. So, the first one said, Moav, what's Moav? Me'av. She basically was admitting to the fact that she slept with her father, which was inappropriate, right? So that's not nice language. And therefore, Amar Lo Kadosh Baruch Hu L'Moshe, Al Tatzer Moav V'Al Tatgar B'Milchama. That's don't attack them. Milchama Hu Delo, but Ha Angaria Avibihu. You can't attack them by war, but you can enslave them if you want. But the Tzi'ira De Ka'amre Ben Ami, she said it in a more hidden language. She called it Ben Ami. Amon is Ben Ami, the son of my nation, which basically means it's coming from my father because it's my nation, but it's much nicer lashon, okay? It's like a more tsanua way of saying it. Amar la kadosh baruch hu l'moshe, v'karav tamul b'nei Amon, when you get close to Amon, al titzurem v'al titgarbam. It doesn't say al titgarbam milchama. So they're darshaning the difference. What does it mean, al titgarbam? Don't start up with them, klal, at all. Ta'afilu angaria lo ta'avibuhu. You can't even enslave them. So you see that they got rewarded, Amon, for using nice lashon. Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yeshua Ben Karcha. So this, the first statement was Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Now he says something in the name of Rabbi Yeshua Ben Korcha. Now he's going to say something better about the Moav rather than the Ammon. Okay, this was a statement that made Ammon look better. Now we're going to, by the way, what's interesting here is, I think what's clearly going on is, as a reaction to this negativity about non-Jews, they're bringing in all these sugyot that talk about positive things about non-Jews. And they're trying to show that we can learn positive things from non-Jews also to kind of counterbalance the halacha. Amar Rosh Hashanah Korcha Le'olam Yakdim Adam Lidvar Mitzvah. Okay, you should always be the first to do a mitzvah. Shebishvil Laila Achad Shekedamta Bechira Letzi'ira. Right, the first night the older one went and slept with the father, and the second night the younger one did. And why did they do it? So yes, they did something wrong, but they did it to for the continuation of society. It was kilu a mitzvah they did. So what happened? What was her reward? Kidamta arba dorot li Yisrael, Ovad Yishai v'David u'Shlomo v'ilu tzira ad rechavam d'chtiv v'shem imo na'ama ha'amonit. Okay, now we go back to those two women mentioned. So Ruth HaMoaviah preceded, right? She came into the Jewish people four generations before Na'ama ha'amonit, who only was the mother of Rechavam. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. Now we're done with the non-Jews. We're moving to the Kutim. Okay, the Kutim weren't mentioned in our Mishnah, but the Gemara is going to raise them from a Braita. Shor shel Yisrael shanagach shor shel Kuti patur. Shel Kuti shanagach shor shel Yisrael tam mishalem chatzi nezek umua mishalem nezek shalem. Okay, so what do you see here? If a Jew attacks a Kuti, the halacha is we don't view that as re'ehu. You don't have to pay. But if a Kuti attacks the shore of Yisrael, then his halacha is the same as a non-Jew, as a Jew. Okay? So now, Rabbi Meir Omer, Shor shel Yisrael shanagach shor shel Kuti patur, v'shel Kuti shanagach shor shel Yisrael, bein tam bein mu'am shalem nezek shalem. Rabbi Meir has them exactly like a non-Jew. Okay? So the Tanakhama has them like an in-between. The Jew doesn't pay damages, but the Kuti pays damages like a Jew would. If he attacks a Jewish. But Rabbi Meir says, no, no matter what, he always pays Nezek Shalom. Now, the Kutim we've seen before, and this is exactly the discussion we're going to get into. Where did the Kutim fall? Who are they, right? They're Shomronim. Remember, they're the people who were taken. They were attacked in Sefer Melachim. They were attacked in the Assyrian Galut. They were brought to Israel. The Israelis were brought abroad. The Yisraelim, not Yehuda, the Malchut Yisrael. They were brought to the city of Shomron, and the animals, the lions, came and started attacking them. So they found a Kohen who taught them the laws of the land, and they started keeping the laws of the land. Now, there's a big debate about what exactly was going on. Because they were Gerei Arayot, do we say they weren't really good Gerim, because they were forced into it? By the way, there's a discussion. Does that mean if you're forced to convert, then your conversion's not a good conversion? Or if you, no, let's put it this way. You converted for the wrong reasons, does that mean your conversion is no good? So nobody thinks, but I did see Hityachasit that that's not the case. We don't believe that. If somebody converts for the wrong reasons, they're still considered that they converted and they're still considered Jewish. What happened here was that they converted for the wrong reasons and also were worshiping Avodah Zarah. And because of that, in other words, it's one thing to convert for the wrong reasons, but yet kind of view yourself as Jewish. But if you, keep worshiping Avodah Zarah, then you can't be considered a proper convert. So anyway, we're going to have this discussion. Where exactly does the Kuti fall? So Lemeimer Desever Rabbi Meir Kutim Gerei Arayotim. If he views them exactly as non-Jews, is it because he says they were forced into it? And if you say they were worshiping Avodah Zarah and therefore are treated exactly like non-Jews, Uriminhi, that contradicts Rabbi Meir's statement somewhere else, because Rabbi Meir says, now we're getting back to Nida. Again, we see a comparison to Nida. If you find... Okay, there's a bit of stuff missing here. Let me read the whole thing, and then I'll read it the way the Gemara Nida has this, and it kind of adds words to it. Kolak Tamim Habaimi Rechem. Rechem is a city. Tehorim. We saw it, by the way. It's one of the border cities, and it comes up in Get. When we talk about what's viewed as Eretz Yisrael and what's viewed as Chutz Laaretz, so Rechem Kamizrach. It's viewed as it's outside Eretz Yisrael. Tahorim. So if a ketzem comes to rekem, they're considered tahor. This means if you find a cloth and you don't know, and there's a ketem on it, and you don't know is it a tame ketem or is it a non-tame ketem? So the question is that thing going to be metame other things? Rabbi Yehuda metame b'mpnei shehem gerim v'toim. Okay, because he treats them, he's metame because he says they're gerim. Okay, we'll see exactly what this means in a minute because it's missing stuff. Mibein hanochrim tohorim, mibein Yisrael, mibein akutim. Oh, sorry. Mibein hanochrim tohorim. If you find a ketem of non-Jews, okay, this is important to know, non-Jewish begadim, like a ketem of dam from Nida, let's say, is not tameh. There's no tumah by non-Jews in terms of these issues. So therefore, mibein hanochrim is tahor. Mibein Yisrael and mibein akutim, Rabbi Meir mitameh v'chachamim mitaharim. Shelo nechshedu al kitmehen. This is a line that's going to be important, but now I'm going to go back and tell you what's missing here. So it starts out, really, it says, from Yisrael and Kutim, from their houses, if you find something in the house of a Jew or a non-Jew, or a Kuti, sorry, we're going to assume it's Tameh. Okay? If you find it in the city, in the street, if it's a city of Jews, we're going to assume the Beged is Tahor. Why? Because Lo Nechshedu Alkit Mehem means that people would never leave out a Tameh Beged in the middle of the street because they know that it will be Metameh other things and they don't want to mess up other things. But if it's Ba'arei Kutim, that's what the Machloket is. If you find something in the city of a Kuti, then what are we going to say? We're going to say, well, Rabbi Meir says it's Metameh. Why is it Metameh? Because, I'm sorry, he says mitame. Why is he mitame? Because he says they're nechshedu on their ketamim. Yes, they're Jewish, and we view them as good gering, but we happen to know that they're not careful about tum and tara, and they might just leave their beged that's tummy in the middle of the street. Chachamim say no. They're dafka makpin on tum and tara, and they're mitarim shalom nechshedu al kitmehem. Now, what can we infer from here? Alma kasava Rabbi Meir, kutim geri ametim, right? He doesn't say it's tahor because they're non-Jews, right? He treats them as Jews. Because if they were non-Jews, it would be Torah Lagamre, because we don't even have Tumah by non-Jews. So how could he say in our case, okay, that Kutim are treated like non-Jews when it comes to damages, but when it comes to Ketamim, we're going to say they're Jewish? Amar Rabbi Abau, Knasu Shekanas Rabbi Meir B'mamonam, Shelo Yitamu B'hem. What happened? Well, yes, they were treated as Jews. What's the issue here? We don't want Jews to interact with them because they only keep Torah Shabbatav and they don't keep Torah Shabbat. And they don't think the Yerushalayim is the Ur HaKodesh. They think it's Har Grizim. And they have a whole different version of religion than we do. And therefore, we don't want people hanging out with them. And therefore, he was Kones their Mamon for that reason. So now we're going to say, wait, but we have a problem. Mativ Rabbi Zeira, ve'elu na'arot she'yeshlam. Oh, so that's why, by the way, Jews don't have to pay Kutim damages. Because we're going to be kones, they're mamon. We're not going to make you pay damages for them so that you view them as non-Jews and you keep away from them. And likewise, we're going to make them chayav because, again, we view them as non-Jews, even though technically speaking they are non-Jews. They are Jewish, sorry. But Matzav Rabbi Zeira, what do you mean we're kones, they're mamon? Here we have a Mishnah that says, Elu na'arot sheyesh lem knas, habala mamzeret, vala netina, vala kutit. These are na'arot that get knas. Right, in the Ones and Mefata cases, if you rape a Kuti, you have to pay Knas. V'isa kadata Knas Rabbi Meir b'mamonam, hachanami niknos, kedei shalei tamuvahem. So if he says we don't pay for damages, then also you shouldn't pay for Ones. So that we don't end up hanging, you know, being in their quarters and hanging out with them. So again, like I said, we're going to repeat this. Amar Abaye kedei shalo yehe chotei niskar. We don't want to reward the rapist in this case. In other words, if we say, well, the rapist doesn't have to pay a knas if he rapes a kuti, well, then he's going to get rewarded by the fact that he raped this girl and he doesn't have to pay anything. Well, on the one hand, we don't want people hanging out with kutim. On the other hand, we don't want people raping, so we're going to make him responsible. So then they say, v'natve, right, and obviously, you could say the same thing with the shur. If your shur attacks, so why are we going to let you get away with it? But there you can distinguish, because your shur attacking isn't you doing a ma'aseh b'yadayim, right? We've said all along, it's just not protecting your property well enough, you're not protecting your animals, you're not watching them enough. But it's not that you actually did something wrong, whereas when you rape someone, you're a real chote, right? In the shur case, we don't view you as a real chote, because you didn't do anything wrong on your own, you just weren't careful enough. So then they say, well, if we don't want the lo yehi chotei niskar, so what should we do? We should do something in between. Netve la'anim. We should say, okay, the rapist should pay the money, But instead of like a what do you call it, an escrow account, you know, instead of saying we're going to give it to the Kuti because she's not deserving of it, because she's not, you know, we don't want to hang out with them, we'll just give it to a poor person. Okay, in other words, that way the chote won't be niskar. So Amar Rav Meir, mishum dehave mamon she'ein lo tovim. Nobody can come claim this in court, though. In other words, let's say he doesn't pay it. So can an ani come and say, I demand this money? No. And he could claim, oh, I'll go give it to any poor person I want. I'll go give it to his friend. You know, who knows? So therefore, it will become money that can never really be collected. And therefore, we insist that he pay it to the kutit, even though, let's say, we wouldn't pay damages in that kind of case, but we do make the ones pay because we want to punish him for what he did. Okay, that's it for today. And like I said, tomorrow I'm teaching those who are around 6:15 at OLRE in the afternoon in Hebrew.